Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast, and just how the calendar falls, this episode coincides with the brand new 2019 NFL league year. Happy New Year, John Sheeran.
I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, I could tell you're popping the champagne bottles and the little the noisemakers over there, right?
Yeah, there's some pom-poms over there, some streamers, you know. I forgot to put the banner, unfortunately, but I think I just took that down early this year.
Well, you're a little less decorative in the background than you were a couple of weeks ago on the program. For those who watch us live or check out the video afterwards, you were quite the fanboy a couple of weeks ago, and now all of a sudden some things have changed.
Yeah, put those jerseys away for good reason.
I bet. We're going to talk about a lot tonight, including what the Bengals have and have not done in free agency. We're going to break down the contracts to a handful of players that they have brought on board in the first couple of days of free agency. And we're going to have help breaking those contracts down with Andre Parada, who, you know, he actually converses quite a bit. For those of you on Twitter, he actually converses quite a bit with beat writers. He converses quite a bit with NFL writers, and obviously all of us at Cincy Jungle in this podcast, very knowledgeable about cap situations, contract structures, and all that. So he's going to be joining us in about 15 to 20 minutes. We're going to be talking about kind of a hot take. John and I are going to debate a couple sides to one specific argument with the Bengals quarterback and some other teams based on what those teams have done so far in free agency. And then we're going to try and get to some listener questions at the end of the program as well. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can get it on the Megaphone platform. All of our stuff is on cincyjungle.com. So download it and subscribe where you can. And you can get this show, check out some video content we have on YouTube. We did, in case you are a little late to the party, we did have a free agency kickoff video and audio segment. It was about 20 or 30 minutes on Monday. We uploaded that, so definitely check that out. And this is going to basically continue off of that. So, John, oh boy. do we want to start with, I guess, positives first or negatives first?
You can get in chronological order of how everything happened.
So I guess we could do that. You and I have not had a chance to talk about the tender offers that they sent out to the restricted free agent group. There's five of them. Brandon Wilson, backup safety, special teams guy, signed his one-year tender there. So, you know, decent move, I guess, there for special teams purposes. Versatile guy. At least, you know, he'll be there for coverage teams. He got a little time on defense, but I don't see anything substantial happening there on defense for him. The big news, though, are the two offensive linemen that the Bengals sent offer sheets to. On the not surprising side, I guess there's a little bit of a surprise with it, but Trey Hopkins was sent an offer sheet at the second round level, the tender there. So a pretty big compliment by the Bengals to Trey Hopkins in terms of how they value him. Versatile guy, played center, played right guard, even has some ability to play tackle, making about $2 million if and when he signs the deal there. Your thoughts on Trey Hopkins getting offered at that level?
Yeah, I think we expected him to come back from what he did last year and the value that he provided for coming in for an injured Billy Price, who missed, I think, six games or whatever. But he's a valuable piece, and they've developed him for 4 or 5 years, and it's kind of what they do. They reward development and availability, and he brings, you know, both of that and also versatility as well. I think the second round tender for this is like $3 million, I believe, and I'm honestly curious if they're going to kind of put that to the side and maybe negotiate a 2 to 3 year deal for Hopkins to become maybe a more valuable, maybe slightly more expensive version of their TJ Johnson, the main interior backup who's active on game days. It'll be interesting to see what Turner plans for him to be, maybe more than maybe a backup center. Maybe he competes for the center spot if they have other plans for Billy Price at guard. But yeah, the $3 million price tag is a little bit more expensive than what they could have done. They could have done the original round tender, which is a little bit less expensive because he was an undrafted free agent, but he's one of their top four offensive lineman players from last year. And so it was pretty obvious to keep him around, to keep your best players. Can't say that about the other offensive lineman that they tendered though.
Well, go ahead. You're teasing it there. Alex Redmond. And by the way, anyone who follows myself and or Joe Goodberry on Twitter probably got a couple of nice surprise. I know I got a nice surprise in that Alex Redmond started interacting with us after some negative comments we put out there on Twitter. But go ahead about Alex Redmond.
I mean, he was an exclusive rights free agent, so the Bengals typically bring those guys back, just like they did Brandon Wilson, just like they did Josh Tupou, just like they did cornerback Tony McRae. So him being brought back doesn't really mean much and wasn't too unsurprising because it's just a one-year deal worth less than $1 million. So essentially what that is just a camp body. But as we've seen from last year, we thought Redmond was potentially going to be a camp body in competition. Then he got anointed as a starter very early in the preseason. We're going to see if Jim Turner's evaluation of Redmond differs any from maybe Marvin Lewis or Frank Pollock's evaluation of him last year that basically got him above Trey Hopkins and Christian Westerman at their right guard spot. He's not good, and he probably is barely rosterable at this point. And this contract obviously reflects that. So I don't think much is going to change for him, regardless of what type of new scheme that the Bengals could implement. I think he's still a very limited player, very limited athleticism, but very feisty. And we've seen that from his Twitter rants.
Yeah. And so feisty, in fact, that he's notorious for false starts. He's so ready for action. So ready for action. Let's spin it into positives, especially since he's paying so close attention to everything we say about him. At this point though, I mean, I guess you based on Hopkins, talking about Hopkins and Redmond here, I guess where you go is you say, well, Hopkins got more money and had, you know, but he was the backup last year, played decent at center, like you had alluded to in the wake of Billy Price's injury, came in for a spell at right guard. Actually, finally, Marvin Lewis, I think, yanked Alex Redmond at one point and finally put in Hopkins at right guard. I mean, there wasn't anything that was a wow type of thing there. That was more with Westerman in the lineup, actually. But, I sit here and I say, well, and we're going to talk about another offensive lineman the Bengals brought back. Is it the continuity thing that the Bengals want to build, and maybe they keep Redmond at right guard, they keep Billy Price at center, or is this something that they envision Hopkins being the center, a starting center potentially, Billy Price being the right guard, and kind of shuffling things there? I think it's a marginal improvement. I don't know if it's a big improvement on a unit that wasn't very good, if that is the plan. There has been no indications that that is the plan. As for now, and I even though Hopkins is a valuable guy, versatile guy, I find it hard to believe that a team's going to offer up a second round pick for him. So, I mean, I think at this point he's going to be a Bengal next year. So, those two guys are back. Now, going into their own unrestricted free agents that were set to hit the market, the first one I think that came down the pike in terms of news was CJ Uzomah, the tight end who has shown marked improvement over the since he's joined the Bengals. Real raw guy when he first came out of Auburn. Didn't even have a tight end coach in college. Came out, kind of made a few plays here and there as a rookie, really grew the last couple of seasons, and then has stepped up pretty big last year, set career highs with over 40 catches, over 400 yards, and 3 touchdowns. With Tyler Eifert out and Tyler Kroft out, he's kind of the, I guess, 2B tight end, option 2B tight end when everybody's healthy on this roster. But now he's making about $6 million a year. Do you think that means that he's going to be their guy? Do they draft a tight end high? They are still talking to Eifert, but I mean, I know we can't rely on that there. So your thoughts on, you know, a pretty substantial contract for a guy that is kind of on the upswing, but hasn't shown all that much statistically.
That's probably got to be the key. I wanted someone to fact check me on Twitter because I honestly think that this is the most substantial or most expensive second contract that the Bengals have given to a tight end that they've developed in at least recent memory. Because I'm going back to the history of tight ends, you got before even Gresham, you had like Reggie Kelly. Drawing a blank on another guy, but they don't have a strong history of tight ends. And obviously, if Ivory was healthy, they may have offered him something more long term, or last year, or maybe the year before that. So he never got a big deal. But Uzama, $6 million a year, it doesn't line up with the elite tight end contracts around the league, but it still puts him in the top half of like 32 starters. And I think that's enough to say that right now he is their starting blame, because when you look at an offense that Zach Taylor could run based off what the Rams did last year, they ran 11 personnel, which has one tight end on the field, well over 90% of their plays. So you're thinking for most of the time, and that's just how most offenses are nowadays anyways, you have one tight end on the field, and for paying a guy $6 million a year, you look at the Bengals and how they operate and how they distribute cash and who normally plays based off what contracts they give out. He's almost pretty comfortably right now that starting tight end. Even if Eifert comes back, I don't think it's going to be much more than what he made last year, if not even less, depending on what his market is. I think they're comfortable with what Uzoma brings as both as a receiver and a blocker. I think the blocking aspect is kind of underrated in what type of run game that they want to establish and sort of wide zone concepts. And I think he's their best blocker that they have on the roster. So he has a lot of value with that. And plus, he proved to be durable. I think he was dealing with a shoulder injury for most of 2018 and ended up playing the fourth most snaps on the offense, most out of any non-offensive lineman. So he was the guy that I wanted them to bring back. I projected about a $5 million per year extension. I think the market kind of upped itself a little bit, so he got in that $6 million range. But I'm happy for him. He definitely earned it, and I think that this was their best option for the position.
Yeah, I mean, they had four guys at the position that are hitting free agency, him being one of them. And then who they had without those four guys, Eifert, Uzama, Croft, and Matt Langle, who they had aside from those guys were Seathan Carter, Jordan Franks, who had two career catches, and Mason Schreck, who has been either injured or a special teams guy. So not much behind them. So they needed to bring back one. They are still flirting with bringing back Tyler Eifert. Obviously, a lot of things have to line up there. Another bit of news, Cincinnati lost Tyler Croft. I think we'll kind of expand on that in a little later in a topic. But, I mean, so two of the four guys have already been picked up. And Croft got a contract very similar to what Uzama got. Now, John, this has turned ridiculous. And I mean that in a variety of ways. But the big shocker is the Bengals signed Bobby Hart, their starting right tackle of last year, to a 3-year, up to $21 million deal. Now, it sounds like it's more, and we'll talk to Andre Parada, like I mentioned, in a few minutes, but it sounds like it's more like a 15 or so million deal. Still, I get that average players are getting more money with the inflated salary cap. I get that you got to spend to get starters, but between him coming back with Redmond,
it's unjustifiable.
That's a great word for it.
No, like spending starting money on bad players is never good. It's bad process. I think a lot of you and me, I think a lot of people were shocked at how much the market skyrocketed for nearly every position, like linebackers and safety specifically, when it took massive jumps. And when in reality, when you have an increase in the salary cap, like you always have every year, this year is $11 million. And the first wave of free agent contracts, the salaries are always going to be inflated. This just happened to be a relatively weak free agency class, which made the top available talent that much more expensive, that much more premium. So it's like the two factors compounded together to create this surge in the market. But there could not have been a market that was surging for Bobby Hart. And knowing all that, it's not surprising to see this, you know, the same old Bengals be inactive in free agency because they hate giving out guaranteed money in the first place. And honestly, I think they're ranked like the third least attractive free agency spot for based off like the opinions of 15 agents. So when you realize that, you know, they don't like spending a lot of money in terms of upfront, in terms of 2-3 year cash flow, but they have to meet minimum spending requirements. What do? They overpay for one of the worst starting tackles in the league. But I'll tell you what, though, I'm happy for Bobby Hart, because if there was ever a destination for him to maximize his earnings, he found it in Cincinnati. Because if you want a simple explanation of how the Bengals reached that minimum spending requirements, they pay for bad talent at a premium price. And there's no better example than paying Bobby Hart on average of $5 to $6 million per year. Who would guess that one of the most frugal franchises would be in the best position to fill a player's bag up? And but that's the reality of the situation. This is not a lot different, in my opinion, than giving Ray Maluga that 3-year contract worth about $15 million a couple years ago. And like we saw with that, they didn't end up getting out of that deal until two years into it. And I think that's going to be the same likely reality with Hart, because people are saying, you know, it's they have a 1-year out, but that's not how they do this, because they didn't get rid of Adam Jones until he had 1-year deals left. Maluga was the same thing. There's another couple examples out there, but they're tied to Hart through at least 2020 because of just how they distribute that cash. And you know, they already paid him with a signing bonus that's going to be prorated, and he's probably going to earn the vast majority of it.
That's a great point, because you know, the two guys you brought up that the Bengals had that option and exercised it to get out of the contract, those guys were at the end of their careers.
Right.
This is a guy, and this is one of the reasons why the Bengals keep touting that why they love this signing is that he's 24 and he's on the upswing of his career, and he's got, you know, it's a player they can continue to develop. There are two things that, I mean, of many that come to mind about this situation. Number one, I am very disappointed in the fact that the Cincinnati Bengals, now we don't know what's going to happen between Hopkins and Redmond, but I am very, very disappointed in the fact that they are giving every single indication, especially with paying starter-like money to Bobby Hart, they're giving everybody every indication that they are bringing back everybody at the same exact spots on the starting offensive line that was a very poor offensive line, especially the right side of the line. Billy Price, rookie, you know, first round pick, maybe you think, you know, he had some struggles. Maybe you think he elevates his play in year two, but they are giving everybody every indication that they are very satisfied with how that offensive line played last year. And it was better at the beginning of the year than the year prior, but it really eroded towards the middle of the year. It was a disaster. It got a tiny bit better towards the end with Joe Mixon getting 3 100-yard games out of 4 to finish the year. Still, that is very disappointing. The other facet that I find absolutely ludicrous is the fact, and go check it out on Twitter, a fan, a ticket holder, sent an email or a letter to the organization saying, I don't want to have my tickets anymore because of this ridiculous signing of Bobby Hart. They sent an email out back to the guy. Now, to their credit, I mean, they're responding to their fans, but I have never seen an organization have to back an individual free agent signing to a season ticket holder, and not only that, give just poor reasons as to why. It's unbelievable, John. I can only
give poor reasons for Bobby Hart, because like in Jeff Hobson's, you know, typical, you know, propaganda machine that he's spinning. And obviously I don't blame Hobson that much, because he's basically told what to write. But honestly, the only quote unquote positive factors with Hart is that he is young. He's 25 years old. It was probably his worst season as a starter because of the amount of penalties and because of the amount of sacks given up. It was the lowest of lows for Hart, but everything that he showed that he was, it was almost basically predictable, because he was a seventh round pick for a reason. He was cut after 3 years on a bad offensive line for a reason. He was brought in only on a one-year, $1 million deal off waivers, off not getting claimed off waivers for a reason. Nobody wanted Bobby Hart in 2018. Who wanted Bobby Hart in 2019 after what he showed? Yet for some reason, they gave him a deal that reflected him to be a quality starter. Now, obviously, it wasn't at the level of Juwan James or Tynus or, you know, other, you know, market-setting tackle contracts that we've seen giving out this offseason, but still, they could have gotten him much cheaper. And I think from just a logical perspective, bringing Hart back on another one-year deal that would have recognized, you know, not a raise, but similar cap percentage based off the increased cap, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, just to have some bodies at the position, because they had 4 free agents. And with Jake Fisher going to tight end, Aboye and Andre Smith being 30 something years old, Hart made some sense to bring back in that sense. But to anoint him as a starter, because that money does mean he's going to start. Like I think Paul Daniel Jr. said, this possibly he could be a backup swing tackle. Not at that cap hit, not at that salary, not at how the Bengals normally operate. He is going to start. They're not going to draft a tackle in the draft this year to start immediately. Hart is the option in 2019, and based off the film, the aggressiveness and the passion that he played, and those are direct quotes from offensive line coach Jim Turner, It's not justifiable. It's not reasonable. It's not logical, and it makes no sense on their part. And there's no way that they can possibly spin this to positive.
Yeah, yeah. Bobby Hart's here to stay, and that's kind of the thing. It was reported initially 3 years, $21 million. That's kind of, again, the total potential of the contract. I don't think he's going to get all of that. It's more of a 3 year, 16 or so million in terms of guaranteed money, but still, he is making more money in 2019 than Clint Bowling. Go figure that one out. Before we bring on Andre Parada, there was one more signing that the Bengals have made, or re-signing. Let me rewind for 1 second. One last thing that really bothers me about the Bobby Hart thing. You kind of touched on it, John. It's the fact that it would be one thing if this signing took place after free agency truly kicked off and they felt that he hit the market, he actually had a demand. Now, we're not privy to that. Maybe there were some people calling him. I find that hard to believe.
Maybe,
but
like AAF teams.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I just find out it seems as if the Bengals outbid themselves on this whole thing. That's what really irritates me about that contract. Moving on, the Bengals re-signed Preston Brown. Now there are mixed opinions on this. Preston Brown is a decent football player. Preston Brown is a decent player to play a position that's kind of a, I don't want to say a passe position in the NFL, but it's not really, unless you find an absolute franchise-changing player, it's not really a guy that you say, it's not really a position you say you got to have that position in today's NFL, or you got to have, it's just not as highly coveted as a lot of other positions in middle linebacker. He played pretty well throughout 7 games last year, battled a couple injuries, actually had 2 interceptions in 7 games, one of which was gigantic against the Indianapolis Colts, but ended up, 1 year deal, left the team on injured reserve, and all of a sudden now he gets a big pay raise, another 3 year, $21 million deal. There are 2 schools of thought. Number one, the Bengals are absolutely desperate at linebacker. He is a good tackler. He's steady. He's not outstanding. So you bring a guy like that back, and you open your options up in the draft in the first and second rounds in terms of position of need. The other thing is, he played less than half a season. He isn't an outstanding player, and he gets more years and a big raise on top of that. So where do you go with that, John?
Like you just said, that the Bengals outbid themselves for Bobby Hart. They outbid themselves for Preston Brown, because Brown, again, he was a second-week free agent signing last year. He got a 1-year deal. It was off the season that he led the NFL in tackles. Like, that means anything positive other than the fact that he just was in the right place at the right time. But he fits the mold of, the past linebackers that they brought in, like a Carlos Dansby or Kevin Minter. Limited athleticism, limited upside, probably no more than just a one-down player, because you're nickel for 70% of your snaps. So you're only in three linebacker sets about 30% of the time. So you're talking about a guy who's maybe going to play 300, 400 snaps, maybe 500 if he plays all of it. But if he's a part of your nickel sets, if he's one of your 2 linebackers out there, that's a problem. Unless he does end up going down to 240 pounds, which I think he said he was going to try to do. He played at 250 pounds when he was healthy, and then he ended up getting hurt. And the one positive of him coming into last year was that he never got hurt. So that there was that one thing. So his value didn't go up at all. From playing off a $4 million deal, to give him a raise to $7 million on average per year, it's also inexcusable. It's not like Brown is as bad of a player that Bobby Hart is. That's not the case. He's an average player, and there is some general upside because he was talented. He was drafted in the second round. He is still 26, 27 years old. So there is potential for some good days left in the future for him. There is potential for him to be better. I don't think that 2018 is the best that we've seen from Preston Brown, and he was a guy that was interested in bringing back, but for that price, it's still this concept of them just spending money on bad players just to hit that minimum spending requirement, so they don't have to go out and get these top level free agents for maximum, guaranteed money for maximum cash flows in the first couple years, which they limit themselves from doing. So this is just another one of those examples of just spending money to spend money, but not really improving the team. Preston Brown doesn't improve the team any better than what they were in 2018, and that's really the genesis of the issue.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the, and God bless him, I'm looking forward to the Jeff Hobson article that says that they're very, very close to finishing spending money this offseason because they spent a lot of money on a starting right tackle and a lot of money on a starting linebacker, the two areas that they needed to shore up. That's no offense to Jeff. I love Jeff Hobson, but
great dude.
He is an awesome guy. But I mean, he's got to write what he's got to write. And luckily I don't have to write that. I can complain about what he has to write, but yeah, Bengals. What's interesting now is what's going to happen at pick number 11, because now the two positions that everybody thought they were going to pick, offensive tackle and linebacker, particularly Devin White, who plays middle linebacker, that's now up in the air. They may go a different direction totally, maybe quarterback. We'll see. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can get this show on the Megaphone platform as well as CincyJungle.com and YouTube. Subscribe to our channels. Get our feeds. Leave us a rating on iTunes and stuff if you can, too. Help bump up the visibility.
Only 5 stars. Only 5 stars.
Yeah, if you can. Help bump up the visibility of the show.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I teased at the beginning of the show that we have a special guest, and this is a perfect time to bring him on because we're talking about these contracts. We're talking about potential albatross-type contracts for the Bengals. We're bringing in Andre Parada. Andre, who, in case for those who do not know, Andre is a very visible presence on Twitter, especially in the ways of salary cap, contract structure and all of that. Andre, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Andy. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. It's seems like it's long overdue since I've had you on the show. It's I feel bad about that, but I'm glad that we are finally having you on. And what better way to indoctrinate you into this show, I guess, with what's been happening. Your initial reaction, we were kind of talking mostly about Preston Brown and Bobby Hart, obviously, before you came on. Your thoughts on Bobby Hart, I guess. Why not continue the pile up on the guy, and your thoughts on the structure of the contract?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on. I should begin by saying happy New league year.
Yeah.
Happy Groundhog Day.
Yeah, exactly.
Orchard fans. So thanks for having me on. With regard to Bobby Hart, one thing I want to make clear is there's nothing personal against Bobby Hart. I feel, Bengals fans, oftentimes we feel the need to somewhat having to qualify that. We're not attacking the person here. We're just talking about, obviously, his play on the field, his caliber of play, and then obviously just from my perspective, just assessing the contract that he signed. And I don't blame Bobby Hart for signing the contract. He didn't offer it to himself. Probably has a very good agent. So
the best agent.
And whatsoever. It's certainly highly questionable, to put it lightly. He played, just to put it in perspective, as I think we all know, the 2018 season on a one-year deal, barely over $1 million. It was $1,005,000, which was cap hit and cash. So obviously he signed essentially a three-year deal. There was a potential out after 1 year, but we all know the Bengals typically don't operate that way, even though the dead money impact would be quite minimal next year, and they would realize a cap saving. So he's likely the right tackle, obviously, for next year, 2019, and likely thereafter, depending, obviously, what they do in the draft. But to me, it's just the value with respect to what he brings to the field from an ability perspective is just lacking. It's, to put it bluntly, it's a complete head scratcher that they would go out on the first official day, I guess, of the tampering period and announce the deal. You know, he was an internal free agent, so he didn't have to wait till 4 p.m. today to sign it, which he didn't. I think he signed it Tuesday morning. But, you know, I can't imagine that there would have been a sizable market for his services. And I mentioned on Twitter 6 years ago when Andre Smith, who, you know, he struggled his first couple years coming out of Alabama in 09. He was overweight. But Andre Smith, from a technical perspective, and you guys can probably speak better than I can on this, I mean, he was a much better right tackle than Bobby Hart ever was in his career. And in the 2013 offseason, the Bengals dug their heels in. They had an offer on the table, and you know, they challenged essentially Smith to go out and see if there was a market elsewhere for him. There pretty much wasn't. And I think the story goes that it was day two of the draft, and Smith comes to the Bengals headquarters in the stadium to sign his contract. And I think the story goes something where Mike Brown says they were ready to draft Menelik Watson, the right tackle at Florida State. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even sure if he's still in the league at this point. But you know, the point being that the Bengals at that point, 6 years ago, maximized their value with what they saw with Andre Smith. And they ended up signing him to a three-year, $18 million contract, so $6 million per year. And that was a reasonable deal. And Smith played well, actually, throughout the course of those 3 years. And then he ended up leaving, of course, going to Arizona. And then he came back, you know, last year. I think he was spent some time in Minnesota as well. So from that perspective, you know, the Bengals back then were digging in their heels. And they weren't getting into the demand. There was no rush to sign him back then. And there was a potential gaping hole if Smith would have left. Because, obviously, they were considering drafting a tackle in round two or three, day two of that draft. So I'm not sure why there was the rush necessarily to sign Bobby Hart. Again, no offense to him as a player. He didn't offer himself the contract. Good for him. I'm all for players, by the way, maximizing their earning potential, especially in football. The contracts are not guaranteed. It's a brutally violent sport, as we all know. So go ahead, maximize your earnings. That's great. Happy for Bobby Hart personally, but just from a value perspective, it is an absolute head-scratcher. And it makes zero sense. They're, objectively speaking, in all honesty, there is no way to justify this contract, to put it frankly. No other team would have given him this deal. And if that happened, if that got to the point where Bobby Hart and his agent said, hey, we have this off on the table, that's when the Bengals have to just wash their hands and say, okay, good luck, thanks for your services, and best of luck. You have to be able to walk away from that deal. They're giving him, from a cash perspective, $7.4 million in 2019. He has the possibility to earn, I think, $500,000 in incentives, so those don't count against the cap, I guess, because they're considered not likely to be earned. So he's got a $7.4 million cash outlay this year and a $5.4 million cap hit. I mean, the cap is at an all-time high. The Bengals have a lot of cap space, but with that said, the value just isn't there. You look at the guy in his caliber of play, he was abused in certain games last year. I mean, he had flashes of, I guess, okayness, where he was, you know, slightly above average in certain games, but overall, I just don't see what either the coaching staff or the front office, whoever combined to make this decision and pull the trigger on this deal, is. It leaves a lot to be desired. It really does. And ultimately, you find a player now who I doubt they're going to give him much competition unless they draft a tackle at 11 or at 42 in round two. But you just handed this guy the right tackle position, and pretty much there's likely to be no competition, and the right tackle position is still a need. I mean, I'm not sure how they can rest easy at night thinking, okay, we solidified the position. And then the last thing I'll say is today, obviously, there was news that broke that Darrell Williams, the right tackle, former fourth-round pick, I believe, out of Oklahoma, I'm sure, you know, dust off the scouting report that the team had for him coming out in 2015 and say, okay, put on his pro tape and see what the guy did. So Darrell Williams was limited to one game last year. I think he hurt his knee during the first game last season. Mm-hmm. So he didn't even play us. He didn't play the Bengals when we played them in week three down in Carolina. But in 2017, he was a second-team All-Pro. Not a Pro Bowler, All-Pro. He signed a one-year, $7 million deal this year, today. So you look at that, and you look at Bobby Hart's deal, it's just there's no way to justify it. There's no way to justify that contract.
So you talked about Bobby. This is John, by the way. You talked about Bobby Hart's cap hit and the cash flow in the first year. There's a difference between the cap space for teams have and the available cash that they have. And in order to bring those quality free agents that we see go off the market in the first couple of days, initial cash is more important than just cap space. So while the Bengals always end up being in the top 10 in cap space, they insist that they don't have anywhere close to that in terms of cash on hand to spend immediately. Can you explain just to the fans why that is the main factor to how the Bengals operate in free agency and why they are typically inactive for the first week or so?
Well, yeah, so that's a good point. It's always important when you're looking at any contract in specific and then the cap in general. There are two components. There's the cap, which is really just an accounting mechanism. And then there's the actual cash that goes on into it. It's what the player is paid. And then what the cap did is depending on how the accounting rules work and how the structure of the contract or how the contract is structured. So, to use Bobby Hart's example, he'll have a $7.4 million cash will earn that in cash this year, but his cap hit will be 5.4. The reason for that is, obviously, if you have a signing bonus or other amounts that are considered signing bonuses, we won't get into that for this conversation, but a signing bonus is, you got a $3 million signing bonus, so it's a three-year deal. So you prorate that, you essentially divide it by the number of years of the contract, maximum of 5 years. So he's got a $1 million, so for example, he'll get a $3 million direct deposit. The payment terms may be different. In other words, he may get half that bonus now and half in October or half at the end of the year. But he'll get his $3 million now. But for cap accounting purposes, that $3 million of the signing bonus is prorated over the life of the contract. So it really, from the bonus perspective, only counts $1 million this year. Then you add his base and his workout bonus, and he's got a $2.5 million roster bonus at the end of this month. So that's how you have the differing levels of cap and cash. But to answer your question, John, it's really important to know the Bengals really, there's a claim that they're cash poor. I don't really buy that claim. I mean, they obviously, they're not. We don't know what their books look like. They're not required to show them. But of the 32 NFL franchises, only one club is required to reveal their books. That's the Green Bay Packers because they're publicly owned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a Forbes article that said, I think in 2017, they had a net profit of $25 million. So even if you take that, and Green Bay is pretty sizable, comparable market to Cincinnati. You say the Bengals, let's say even a super conservative estimate, say they're profiting $15 million. Let's say they've profited $15 million since the start of the new CBA in 2011. I mean, they're still sitting on tens of millions of millions of dollars, if not $100 million in cash. So I'm not sure if I really buy the notion that the Bengals are cash poor. But regardless of that, how they operate is they don't like huge signing bonuses. They don't like a lot of guaranteed money. There is a funding rule in the CBA that says the league may require a team to fund money for guaranteed portions, for guaranteed salary. But the interesting thing is, with the way the Bengals structure contracts, they don't guarantee any base salary. The only guarantees are in the signing bonus. So, you're right. I mean, you look at Juwan James, for example. He signed a massive contract in Denver. I think he had a $12 million signing bonus. The Broncos are literally cutting in the check or direct depositing into his bank account $12 million this year. It could be a one-time payment. It could be, again, like half now and half in 3 months. But it's $12 million. And then for accounting purposes, it's prorated over that deal. So the Bengals, it's just the way they operate. They don't like cutting those huge checks or making those huge cash payments initially. They'll do it for their own guys. For example, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap's extensions last year, they had pretty good sizable signing bonuses. But they'll shy away from, like you said, this initial wave, although really there are no more waves in free agency. It's just the initial, gold rush from a player's perspective. They'll shy away from that. And now other clubs who tend to shy away from that, the Steelers, the Packers under Ted Thompson, although under their new GM, Brian Gutekunst, they're obviously going in a different direction. other franchises can point to that and say, oh, well, he's been successful. But we haven't won a playoff. The Bengals haven't won a playoff game in almost three decades. So, to me, nobody's saying to go out and blindly spend and throw away and burn cash. Nobody's saying that. But for a team to adopt the same strategy essentially year after year of avoiding high-end free agents, which is fine, but how about a targeted free agent, a Juwan James, for example? A player like Juwan James solidifies the right tackle position. Yes, you're going to have to spend cash because you're going to have to give them a huge signing bonus because, to your point, John, those players want that money now. They want that guarantee. Bengals don't offer guaranteed base salary, so the way to do that is to give a pretty decent signing bonus. They don't do that, and you know you see the results. The high-end free agents, or even the decently above, you know, better than average, maybe not elite players, but you know, nobody would say Juwan James, for example, is an elite player, but he's certainly good, and he has the potential to be even better, to get better. So that's the result. I mean, you end up, the Bengals will probably end up signing in a week or two some outside free agents, just 1 or 2 year deals with very minimal signing bonuses. And to me, it's just after you've tried this method and the results are what they are, I think a close examination is in order just to say, hey, what's going on here? Maybe we adopt a different approach.
Right. And so you talked about them potentially, or not potentially, but definitely overshooting their Bobby Hart's market and kind of scrambling to get that deal underway. They haven't done that with Darqueze Dennard yet. And what we've seen in the first couple of days is the cornerback market looks about what we expected. We have Pierre Desir getting about $8.5 million. Steven Nelson for the Steelers is getting $8.5 million. Justin Coleman going to the Lions for about $9 million. So for Darqueze Dennard, his market seems about set. In your evaluation, is this about where you would probably feel comfortable signing Darqueze Dennard, or would you feel comfortable at this price, basically letting him test the market and maybe getting a little bit more than those guys?
Yeah, I'd be comfortable. I mean, Justin Coleman, you nailed it with all those guys. I would also add Buster Screen. He's on the low end of that. Buster Screen signed a 3-year, $16.5 million deal. And that's averages $5.5 million. And that's obviously the low end. Dennard and his agent aren't going to sign that type of deal. But, yeah, I mean, I'd be comfortable signing agreeing to a 4-year, $36 million deal, the Justin Coleman deal. Dennard may want slightly more because there's talk out there that he may view himself as an outside corner. But for the slot corner, the nickel corner, essentially, that market is pretty well established. And you know, this year, you know, the outside corner market is kind of slow here to kind of take off, kind of like the safety market last year. Although the safety market last year really, really took its time to get going. But there have been some corners that you mentioned. You mentioned the right guys here that are right within range of what I think is Dennard's value. And to be quite honest, Darqueze Dennard was definitely the highest. There's just no way to look at it otherwise. Darqueze Dennard was the most prioritized internal free agent for the Bengals. I can guarantee you they made an offer. They may have even upped the offer, sweetened it a little bit. But what they're doing with Dennard now, since he's not signed, and we really haven't heard anything about him or his market, it's essentially the Andre Smith situation playing out that I referenced earlier in 2013. There's no way that they haven't made him an offer. They've probably made him an offer that they feel is legitimate and in line with the market value. Possibly even close to the Justin Coleman deal, 4 years, $36 million, and they're probably saying that Darqueze, we really want you back. Go out and see what your market is, and come back to us. See if we'll match it. And they're digging their heels in with Darqueze. Now they could sign him. They have enough cap room, and you know they'll spend on their own guys, so they'd give him a pretty good bonus and a good year one roster bonus and a year two roster bonus, which works as effective guarantees essentially. But My question is, it's just head-scratching again, why did not they adopt this approach for somebody like Bobby Hart? Or what was the rush to sign him? You know, you're not rushing to sign Dennard. I guarantee you, again, they've made offers to him. But I'd be comfortable signing him. On my Twitter feed, I think I proposed, this was a few weeks ago, I proposed a 5-year, $43.75 million deal for Darqueze. That averages out to 8.75 APY or AAB. I think that's more than fair. That was obviously before Justin Coleman's deal on the free market with the Lions. Before you mentioned Pierre Desir signed 3 years, $25 million today. That's $8.33 million a year. So I think 5 years, $43.75 million with the structure I had on my that I tweeted out a couple weeks ago. I think that's more than fair to both sides. I think Darqueze and his representatives think that they could maybe get better than that on the market, although it's Wednesday and some money's drying up. So if anything, the Bengals' offer may go down, but it's certainly not going to increase at this point. But again, it's just head-scratching because he had to have been the most prioritized free agent of the internal free agents, and they're digging in their heels, and that's fine because they don't want to overpay. But I'm not sure how you can justify doing it to obviously a pretty good player like Dark West, but essentially cave or panic and just give Bobby Hart that deal when the reality is there probably wasn't a market for his services. But to answer your question specifically, yeah, I'd feel comfortable right around that range. You could probably even go maybe $10 million, pushing it $10 million a year. I'd be comfortable with that. At this point, honestly, I think Darquez, from a player perspective, his agent and him, they may want a shorter year deal, like a shorter term deal, like a 3 or 4 year, just because the market is kind of moving slowly, and they probably don't want to be locked in to like a 5 year deal, especially if the Bengals get him 5 years for $43.75 that I've estimated here. If Darquez plays at the same level or even gets better, they're going to honor that entire deal. And
right.
A year or two, that's going to be an incredibly valuable deal because the market's going to reset for nickel corners. It always does for almost every position. It may take a year or two, but down the line, you know, the Bengals are going to have a very valuable deal if they agree to a term, a contract like that. So from his perspective at this point, he may want a shorter term deal, maybe 3 years or 4 years at most. But I think a 4 year, $36 million, even 4 year, $40 million, with a good structure for him where he gets maybe $20 million of that in the first 2 years, I think he'd sign right now. And in my proposed contract that I tweeted out, I think I had him at $21 million cash over the first 2 years. So that's 10.5 average over the first two. But then over the life of the five-year deal, it ends up averaging 8.75. And in my proposal, the cap hit was 9.6 million. I think that's a deal where I think both sides can agree that's more than fair. But we'll see what happens. I think he ultimately does come back because I really haven't heard anything about his market with regard to other teams. So I think ultimately he comes back. If he's holding out for maybe 11 mil a year, I think that may be too steep for the Bengals, but I see him coming back anywhere between like 8.5 million to at the high end 10 million a year.
Yeah, he's a difficult guy to figure out in terms of a contract just because you know, he's had some injuries. The stats aren't eye popping, but he's right. A former first round pick. He's valuable. He's got a good skill set, particularly as a slot corner, which is now such a valuable asset in the NFL. But the market is just weird for him specifically because of, you know, his personal history. We're talking with Andre Parada, expert on the salary cap, expert on contract structures. And if you don't believe me, go check out his Twitter. It's at Andre_Parada13 on Twitter. A lot of interesting stuff that he puts out there, and he's a much smarter man than I am. We're going to get you out of here with this one, Andre. Look, the Bengals basically set out, depending on how you look at it, which source you use, the Bengals set out and they had about, I believe, $42 million or so of cap space, right? You look at what they've done so far and how those contracts are structured between Uzama, Preston Brown, Bobby Hart. You maybe cut into, what, half of that or so? We know that the Bengals talk about the rookie pool that no other team seems to talk about, and the in-season windfall for injuries and all that kind of stuff. What do you see? I mean, you just mentioned the numbers for Denard. There's another 9 or $10 million potentially. What do you see the team doing the rest of the way here in terms of, you know, getting close to spending most of that money, maybe freeing up some more with a potential Vontaze Burfict cut? I mean, just – look into your crystal ball a little bit here before we get you out of here and let us know a little bit about what you think you see ahead here for the Bengals in free agency and what they could be spending.
If I knew what they'd be doing, I'd be in a different industry. I'd
right.
go buy some lottery.
Right.
Because based on, you know, I mean, look, we're hours after the official start of the league year, and everyone anticipated, right, that within our first three signings, the new league year under a new head coach would be Uzama, Preston Brown, and Bobby Hart, right? This is where we all saw ourselves like a week or so ago, right? I mean, raise your hand if you saw this happening. Nobody saw this happening. I mean, especially the Bobby Hart deal. Not the harbor on that one, but to answer your question, I think they'll get a deal with Denard likely in the next, you know, 24 to 48 hours, because I think probably the Bengals have the best offer on the table. That's just a hunch. I think they likely will want to get a deal done with Eifert again. he won't get a raise. You know, unlike Preston Brown, who got a raise and a longer-term deal, Eifert obviously has the unfortunate injury history, unlike Preston Brown. Preston Brown was an Iron Man, essentially, his first 4 years. Last year, of course, coming home, and he gets the injury bug to just as the Bengals, for the Bengals' luck. But I think they try to get something done with Eifert on an incentive-laden deal, probably a one-year, $3.5 million deal for him with a lot of incentives that could push it maybe to double that to $7 million. But honestly, what I anticipate, I think they do sign a linebacker. I think KJ Wright is still available. A couple of guys who have been cut and won't count against the Holy Grail, which is the Bengals' comp picks, which is really just the reason they love that. It just represents cheap labor. Let's just be honest. It's a cheap draft pick,
right,
for them. So that's why they don't want to ruin those. But I could see them signing a linebacker like a KJ Wright. KJ Wright had an injury last year. He's 29 years old. I think he'll be 30 years old before the start or right at the start of the season. But I think he does bring value. I haven't heard much talk about him on the open market. So I think you can get him at a pretty reasonable rate, maybe a one-year, $6 million or two-year, $13 million deal. But honestly, we're probably looking at, I mean, this is depressing. We're probably looking at for outside free agents. Again, I think they signed Denard. I think they signed Eifert back. They'll probably cut Vontez Burfict. That clears up this year a little over $5 million in cap space. But it's shocking that they haven't cut Vontez at this point. I mean, it's completely mind-boggling that they have not let him go at this point. I mean, you have his personal health issues, too, with his concussion history and he tends to show up out of shape and overweight to training camp. It's just shocking that they haven't cut him yet. I just don't know what the value that Vontez brings, unless he just shows up in ungodly shape this year, which I highly doubt. But I think they do find room for a linebacker. I think there's need still for the defensive line. Because honestly, Carlos and Gino, they're still great players. They're pushing the wrong side of 30 now. They still have enough left in the tank to be very good players, if not elite players, for the next couple years. But you got Carl Lawson coming off an injury. Sam Hubbard flashed at times. He had a pretty good rookie season last year. Jordan Willis, to be honest, hasn't really shown much, if anything, his first 2 years. So, I mean, there's hope. Maybe he shows something in year three, but after about 2 years and 30-plus games in the league, you kind of get a sense of what a player's going to do. And so I don't know you go in 2019 banking on Jordan Willis. You know, Billings is in a contract year. I don't know if a lot of people think this. You guys may have addressed it. I think the defensive line is a big issue. You got guys like Muhammad Wilkinson, who signed a one-year deal in Green Bay, former first-round pick of the Jets. I think he could be had on a cheaper deal, 1 year, $5 million, with some incentives in there. But again, we're not looking at anything substantial or major. These are going to be deals that are on the Bengals' terms. They're likely to be one-year deals, pretty much in the Preston Brown mold. Although Preston, yeah, I think last year signed at the end of the first week. But I think as we push closer in the next couple of weeks, I think obviously they'll make a couple signings, but one guy I think I would like to see just selfishly is Justin Houston. Justin Houston wouldn't count against comp picks. I haven't heard much about him. You know, he'd be strictly an edge rusher, but you know, in a rotation of Dunlap and Carl Lawson, Sam Hubbard, Jordan Willis, and Justin Houston, those are five edge guys that form a pretty formidable group. Because right now you got Dunlap, Lawson, Hubbard, Willis, and that just leaves a lot to be desired after Dunlap and really Lawson, and hopefully Carl can regain his 2016 form or 2017 form, his rookie season form. So I see those types of signings, to be quite honest. I mean, there may be a surprise cut here or there, but with Hart in the fold and Preston Brown back, I mean, there's room obviously for another linebacker. You know, KJ Wright's probably the biggest name on the list, but there was talk earlier this week about Brandon Marshall. He really doesn't move the needle that much. But again, to be honest, from a contract perspective, the way the Bengals operate, these are going to be 1 or 2 year deals at most.
Yeah.
They're not going to be 4 or 5 year deals. They're not going to be guys that move the needle. And it's sad from not only from a fan perspective, but really objectively, you kind of take your fan hat off and just objectively analyze the roster and their way of doing things. You know, the point of free agency, the point of the offseason is to improve the roster, obviously. And it's so stagnant. It gets so stale. Operating this way year after year, signing these guys to one-year deals, maybe you catch lightning in a bottle, so to speak. But you know, I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer. I'm just going off history and going off what they've done already. I could see a KJ Wright I could see, I'm not even sure the other linebackers there. I've mentioned Brandon Marshall. There's Jake Ryan, I think, from Green Bay, but, you know, he doesn't do much. I remember Coach Taylor saying they want to get faster on defense. I mean, how is that accomplished when he re-signed Preston Brown? No offense to Preston, but I just don't know. The coaching staff, the new staff is saying one thing, but what the front office is doing in terms of their signings, it's completely the opposite, or at least not listening to what the coaches want. So, you know, I see a couple signings here and there, but not much. I mean, I really don't think they're not going to be active in free agency. They haven't been. They'll probably re-sign Denard. I'd probably put that at 80-85% that they'll re-sign him. They'll probably get Eifert because I haven't heard anything there, but that'll be a one-year deal. And then they'll probably get a one-year deal with, again, like a D-lineman. You got Wilkinson, you got Earl Mitchell, I think. But again, these guys are kind of, at this point, just another guy, really. They're Jags. I mean, they could do well in a rotation, but they're not going to be anything to really raise the talent level of the roster, to be honest.
Yeah, I think we're looking at some more rental deals. That's kind of what the Bengals have done with outside guys. And
I really see that.
You know, sometimes they parlay that into a long-term, you know, like you said, if they catch lightning in a bottle, sometimes they've parlayed that into longer-term deals. Adam Jones comes to mind. Reggie Nelson is a guy they traded for that kind of comes to mind. And then you talked about linebackers, maybe Darren Lee, a guy who is supposedly on the trading block. Maybe he's a guy who they make a move for. Well, Andre, we gotta get out of here, man. You were awesome. We will have you back on for sure. We appreciate the time. I know you were juggling a lot with dad duty and all that kind of stuff. So we appreciate you coming on, man. I really would like you to come back on again.
Anytime. I appreciate you guys having me. Thanks, Anthony. Thanks, John, as well. And well, one last point. I do agree that, you know, the Reggie Nelson-type trade, you know, Darren Lee for the Jets. They signed Avery Williamson last year. They just signed C.J. Mosley. He's on the block. Trade a couple of those six-round picks. Trade one of them. The Jets will give you Darren Lee. Same deal with Reggie Nelson, former first-round pick, underachieved. Underperform. He's a local kid. He went to Ohio State. I think he's also from Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I'm in favor of that deal. Thank you very much, Anthony. Thank you, John, for having me on, and happy to do it again.
All right, appreciate it, man. Let's hope they get a little more active, huh?
I just want them to make targeted signings to really raise the talent level of the roster. Nobody, again, is asking for splashes, but, you know, the talent level, three straight losing seasons, you know, you got to add talent to this roster.
Yep. So,
yeah, they completely whiffed on the 2015 class, and but anyway, we'll see what happens. It's been completely underwhelming, but unfortunately not surprising at this point. You know, hopefully there's some surprises in stores, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. And you would think it would be a little different with a new coach, but I guess not. Real quick. What they can get you on Twitter. Is it @Andre_Parada13? Is that right?
No underscore, just Andre Parada 13, and I appreciate the kind words. I don't consider myself an expert. I do know a lot about the cap and contracts, but those were very flattering words, and I do appreciate them. And I enjoyed my time, and I look forward to hopefully joining you guys again.
Yeah, well, you know a hell of a lot more than me, man. So we appreciate you coming on, and we'll get you on again soon.
Awesome, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
thanks, John.
That was Andre Parada, man. That was awesome. Really, really knows his stuff. And, I got to thank my co-host on that one. He came up clutch and, not only arranged the interview, but came up with the idea. And I was kicking myself, 'cause I was like, why have I not thought of that before? So I appreciate you setting that up, John, and our thanks to Andre for that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We did go a little long, but that's fine because he brought immense knowledge and a lot of good stuff to the program. Do we want to talk about the quarterback topic, John, or do we want to hold off on that?
You know, I think you raised some good points before we recorded, so I think the audience deserves to hear your side of this.
Okay. We will try and get to some listener questions. It may be very few, so if you want to leave those in the live YouTube chat or the cincyjungle.com thread, you can leave those there. We will try to get those. You can text us or call us. Hold off on the calls until maybe the end of the show. Like I said, we're gonna try and get to these. The number to call or text is 949-542-6241. You can text now if you'd like, but hold off on the calls until later. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can get it on Megaphone. You can get it on CincyJungle.com, and you can get it on YouTube. And we're live every episode. We record live. If you're new to this program or you're only able to do the audio up to this point, join us on YouTube as we record. You get to see our beautiful faces for about an hour and, make fun of us, ask us questions, all that kind of good stuff. Okay, John, so we're gonna talk about this, and guess what? It's another offseason, another Bengals offseason, and we're talking about Andy Dalton in the quarterback position. But we're talking about it. I want to talk about it in a different way. It's kind of a little hot take segment, I guess. And I want to tie this into a lot of news and notes that have been going on around the NFL and free agency and what we've heard so far in the very early goings of it. I got to thinking, especially right after the Browns traded for Odell Beckham Jr. I don't know if you've heard about that, by the way. Have you heard about that?
I did.
It's been everywhere.
Hard to miss.
Yeah. But after the trade, I kind of thought, you know, kudos to the Browns because they drafted a guy, number one overall, a quarterback number one overall, and all they have done is load up, particularly on offense, and surround and support that quarterback with talent. There was another quarterback from last year's draft, Josh Allen, in which the Bills, yes, the Buffalo Bills, have come in and they have started to load up with a lot of surrounding talent to help support Josh Allen, Cole Beasley, Tyler Kroft, and others. Obviously, the Browns over the past couple of years, Jarvis Landry, Callaway, Odell Beckham Jr., Njoku. The list just goes on and on. So I sit here and I see those moves, yet you see and hear the rhetoric from the Bengals saying Andy Dalton's our guy. Go with him. We think we got what we need. Yes, the Bengals have AJ Green, awesome receiver. Yes, they have Tyler Boyd, who's coming off a great season. But their big signing to this point is a fringe starter / backup tight end and a very poor offensive tackle. To me, I feel like the Bengals, yeah, they've lied to us about a lot of things before, but I feel like they and Zach Taylor and others are lying to us when they say that they think Andy Dalton is the guy, they want to support him, and they're going to do what they can to move forward and surround him with a lot of talent. Now, the draft has yet to happen. Further things have yet to play out in free agency, and I mentioned the Bengals have some good players at the skill position, but as I also mentioned earlier, they seem hell-bent on breaking out the same five offensive linemen from last year on a bad offensive line. And they are not being active under a new coach to solidify the rest of the offense. I don't know. Am I just kind of reaching and being overly envious of what these other teams are doing? Or am I on any kind of solid ground here?
Well, the one thing that comes to mind for me is that it, and this is not anything new, I think, when it comes to the Bengals fan base, is that even beyond past when Dalton signed that second contract, we still kind of treat him like a young guy, like a young quarterback who's capable of being better, even though he's going to be 32 years old and entering his ninth year in the NFL. And at this point in your career, and if you have a quarterback well into a second contract, and honestly, is not that expensive of a contract. I think he ranks like 23rd or 24th in terms of average salary. Like, this is the time where your quarterback's supposed to be elevating talent around you. You're supposed to be fully developed and supposed to be capable of leading a team and not have a completely stacked, you know, offense around him. And I think early in Dalton's years, they did a decent job of that, in, at least in the draft. They drafted Green. They ended up drafting Mohamed Sanu, Marvin Jones. They drafted Giovanni Bernard. They brought in a couple offensive linemen through the draft as well. So I think they did a decent job of that when Dalton was the age of Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. And at this point, if they have to continue stacking the roster around him, that is a good point to bring up. Do they believe that Dalton is worth investing all the surrounding talent in him when they're already paying him like one of the most expensive players on the roster? It's not surprising at all to think that a quarterback coach coming as a new head coach is not married or handcuffed to the quarterback who's currently starting for the team, and that he doesn't have a long-term future on this team. And honestly, if their whole objective still is to build around Andy, and these are the moves that they're doing, it honestly could just be that they're awful at evaluating talent and giving Bobby Hart starting money at right tackle and just maybe leaving alone the tight end position with just Uzoma. But I think that might be a whole other issue that you're alluding to. But I think that it's entirely possible that Taylor is not interested in starting Dalton past 2019, and maybe without even knowing, they're just tanking themselves based off their just poor process and free agency and their poor evaluation with the coaches that they brought in.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of – now, there are signals. They're just giving us mixed signals, right? Yeah. I mean, you look back at 2015, they loaded him up with Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, A.J. Green, Andrew Whitworth. I mean, their offensive line was very good. Tyler Eifert had – I mean, they were very, very stacked. Jeremy Hill was coming off a great season in 2014 at that point, Giovanni Bernard. And right now you look at it, okay, yeah, 2017, they used a top 10 pick on another receiver, which they needed. Last year they traded for a left tackle and they drafted a center. So you got two new starting offensive linemen there. You also had two new starting offensive linemen on the right side from a poor offensive line the year prior. But then you look at 16, you let Whitworth and Zeitler walk. You just look at some of these things and you go, well, which one is it, right? I mean, now, like I said, the Bengals gave starter money to who they believe is their starting right tackle in Bobby Hart. They gave starter money and pretty big money to their middle linebacker, which is a big position of need on this team, to Preston Brown. They have other positions of need still to address at linebacker and whatnot. But those are the two positions that almost everybody thought they were going to address at number 11 and or number 42 in the draft. So now, what do you look? Defensive line, cornerback, quarterback? I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like they're giving us all kinds of mixed signals.
I think, going back to like the last point I made, I think if they were to tank, it would be somewhat of an ignorant tank where they feel like they could be in a position to win and just end up winning 2 to 3 games. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but yeah, I think most options are still on the table. I think it's possible that if they were to go offensive line at 11, it could be like a guard that maybe has a future and outside, maybe like a Dalton Risner or Jonah Williams, who may be more suited to play guard early in his career and then potentially move outside towards the later years of Bobby Hart's contract. But I think, you know, obviously linebacker could still be in play there because Preston Brown's not like the finishing touch of that equation. That position group still needs some work. And based off what they said earlier, you know, they still need speed there and they still need improvements there. And what they have there is not enough. And we still don't know if Vontaze Burfict's still going to be around for this year. So I think most options are still on the table in draft. And that includes quarterback, because as we saw just today here on Wednesday, Oklahoma had its pro day today. The main attraction was Kyler Murray. It wasn't Jim Turner who was down there representing the Bengals. It was Zach Taylor. And he was kind of eyeing Kyler Murray a little bit if you saw some of the videos. So I think, like we talked about earlier, this is the first year that quarterback is actually somewhat of a possibility and not just the only position that's not being considered in the first round in a premium position. And as we saw from the Jaguars, they committed themselves to Nick Foles, so they're probably out of the quarterback market. We don't know what's going to happen with the Cardinals and Josh Rosen. We don't know what's going to happen with the Raiders. The Giants could be locked in with Eli Manning. There could be a situation where you have one of those top two quarterbacks, meaning Dwayne Haskins or Kyler Murray, falling out of the top 10, and maybe the Bengals, if they have Kyler or Dwayne high on the board, maybe they make a play at him. But regardless, I do think that this is not the way to, I guess, build around Andy Dalton by giving him a piss poor right tackle and bringing back the right guard that was also really bad next to him. If that's the plan, then he's going to get sacked 40 to 50 times, and he's the worst quarterback to have a bad offensive line front because he can't create for himself and he can't extend plays. So if this is the plan that they're doing and this is the plan that they're executing, it's not a very good plan and shows that they have very little direction with what they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about some of the comments in the live YouTube chat. Christian... Cincy fan Jungle City says the whole situation with Mike Brown saying he answered the fans call to fire Marvin and move on was a big deception. Christian Dillingham says, how can the front office watch what's happening within in the division and think this is okay? Our defense was the worst in the league. Let's see. Why is it that we all know this stuff, but the front office doesn't? That's from Matthew Wayne Smith. Yeah, it's easy playing armchair quarterback. So, I mean, I don't think I'm off too big of a limb there, but, you know, I thought it was something worth bringing up, given what's been going on. We do have a call on the line. It's we haven't talked to him for a few weeks. It's our good friend Terrell. Terrell, how are you, sir?
How's it going?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right. How about you?
I just got to say, towards the popularity type level, the Bengals kind of went down, you know what I mean, especially in the AFC and in the NFC North. If you really want to, I mean, I know it don't matter on the field, but I'm just trying to put it out there a little bit. And on the other thing is, as soon as we thought it was wide open, I mean, just all kind of crazy stuff happened in the AFC, not just in the North, just in general in the AFC, which a lot of the superstars in the AFC came over here, and then just what happened with the Browns and just everything like that. And a last little quick thought, maybe Zach Taylor fooling us and thinking, I'm about to draft all these fast guys on the defense and get a quarterback and a couple playmakers, and we're going to get up out of here. And I just hope it's White or the guy from Alabama, the defensive tackle. Maybe them two to follow towards. Maybe we'll get luck with them two.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Hobson has, in two of his mocks that he's put out, he keeps having them take Christian Wilkins, the defensive lineman out of Clemson. So maybe he's the pick. Maybe defensive line is the pick. I find it hard to believe, and I've said this before on the show, I find it hard to believe that Zach Taylor won't want someone on offense as some of his early picks, particularly a quarterback, to kind of put his stamp on things.
I hope it ain't the guy from Duke. I know it's talks about him and all that, but I hope it ain't. I'll take Lock over him. I really would take Lock over him over if it comes down to a second or third round pick. And then I'll take Don Reisner in the second round and Evan White or Bush in the first round.
All right. Well, thanks, Terrell. Appreciate you calling in. Sorry you had to wait a little bit, but appreciate it, man.
No problem. Have a good one.
All right. Thoughts on what he had to say, John?
Yeah. It was pretty clear the whole power dynamic shifted massively in the AFC North with Antonio Brown leaving the division, Odell Beckham Jr. coming to the division, Earl Thomas coming to the Ravens. Like, the Ravens will always, I guess, eternally have an elite free safety in that defense. It wasn't just Earl. It wasn't just Ed Reed. It wasn't just Eric Reddle. It's now Earl Thomas there. So you look around the division, I guess the Steelers haven't gotten better, just like the Bengals, but the Ravens, the division winners, are still improving. They're still building around Lamar Jackson. They're still compensating for the losses on their defense in appropriate ways. The Browns, like, you have to respect what the Browns are doing, and you have to respect the fact that they're in the best position to compete in the AFC North for multiple years to come, because, yeah, it's the Browns. There's a stigma with that, but there's also stigmas with the Bengals that Bengals fans don't appreciate. So I think it's fair to judge what the Browns are right now and judge that they are in the best position to win the AFC North from the moves that they've done. Not only did they trade for Odell Beckham Jr., but they also traded for Olivier Vernon. They ended up gave up Kevin Zeitler in the process, but they drafted a guard pretty high that they feel comfortable in putting in, and they did something with Kevin Zeitler that the Bengals probably should have done with Kevin Zeitler before he let them go to Cleveland. And then they brought in Sheldon Richardson at three technique for $13 million a year, and they pretty much completed that defensive line. That defensive line against the Bengals offensive line is going to be a major mismatch for at least the next couple years to come if the Bengals offensive line doesn't improve drastically. The Browns, like, they swept the Bengals last year, and that's probably, at this point, going to be a trend that's going to continue unless the Bengals make drastic changes of their own. And as we've seen from the first couple days of free agency, nothing has really changed, even though the coaching staff has changed.
Good points, John. We've got another caller, probably the last of the night, so we can get out of here. I believe it's Josh, who is a first-time caller. Correct? Is this Josh?
Yeah, man, this is Josh. Definitely a first-time caller, but a big Bengals fan since 05, born and raised in Cincinnati, and that's kind of when I started understanding what football was and fell in love with the Bengals. But, man, my question, just to get right to it, AJ Green, I understand he's got like 1 year left on his contract for about $15 million, and I'm just kind of trying to figure out like what we do with that. Like, do we re-sign it, restructure him, or do we try to finesse our way into maybe moving up in the draft, or even go for a big name in like free agency and just kind of see what we can kind of give with his value in the market? Thanks for taking my call, man. Big fan of the show. And I'll be checking in from here on out.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for the compliment. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate you being patient and everything. Always nice to hear a new voice and a complimentary new voice, right, John? Right. I don't know what the fans would do from a PR perspective if Cincinnati decides to if they trade AJ Green in an offseason that has just not really started off on the right foot between the coaching issues and the slow free agency start. To me, I mean, right now, as Josh said, right now is when you can get draft capital and probably decent draft capital for an AJ Green. The problem is, I mean, there are so many polarizing quarterback prospects. I mean, I would assume you would use that draft capital to get a quarterback of the future, right? Right. The problem is there with so many polarizing prospects in this class, I don't know that this is the year that you do it.
Yeah, and that's fair. And like, the timing doesn't exactly, you know, match up with everything. And what's important to know is that if you're trading AJ Green, it's going to be somewhere. The compensation right now for a 30-year-old going on 31 years old, coming off an injury-riddled season, first time he didn't make a Pro Bowl, it's going to be in between what the Giants got for Odell Beckham and what the Steelers got for Antonio Brown. Right. So you're not getting a first-round pick for AJ Green. I think that's pretty much established at this point. He's on the wrong side of 30. He's not the spring chicken like Beckham is. He's going into his third contract. So I don't think a first-round pick is on the table unless it's like one of like the four – like the last four picks of the first round. Even then, you're trading AJ Green to probably like the Chiefs or the Patriots, like when your main competition in the AFC. Those are two, or maybe not the Chiefs, but maybe more so the Patriots that could use him. So if you're getting a first round pick, it's going to be a late first round pick. Probably getting like a second, maybe along with a third round pick, maybe 2 seconds, maybe one of them is a future pick. So you have to consider that's going to be the compensation. And that is compensation to what maybe Bengals fans hope that they could have gotten for Andy Dalton if they had traded him before then, because the whole goal is to get those assets to eventually move up to draft a quarterback if you don't end up finishing as one of the worst two teams in the NFL. But it's not impossible. I think Green fits along the lines of like Geno Atkins, who is just the type of player that would be comfortable accepting another deal with low guaranteed money. Like, Atkins ended up signing well below what Aaron Donald eventually got a couple weeks later, back in right before the 2018 season. It wasn't going to be anywhere like near where the market was for the very top interior pass rushers, but he ended up signing anyways, because I think there's just that type of personality that the Bengals gravitate towards. And everything that we've heard from AJ Green was that he wants to finish his career here. And those are just words, and money ends up being more important than what the words that these players speak. But, you know, AJ Green's happiness is really all that I care about. And if he wants to go to a contender, I think the Bengals should honor that wish and end up trading him for the most that they can get right now. But Green may want to finish his career here and may end up taking less actual money than he could end up getting on the open market. So I think the plan for Green would be to try to get him extended for this year and not go into 2020 free agency, because if they do, I don't think they're going to match the guaranteed money that Green will end up getting on the open market, because even though he is going to be 31 years old, I think there will still be a substantial market for him because he is still a top five player at his position. He still has tremendous value. It's just not the long-term value that would net a first round pick, I guess. And I think if the Bengals were to trade him, undoubtedly it would be for a first round pick. And I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I'm just going to try and – I've got a small handful of points why I think they should not trade him. I'm going to try and be succinct with it. Number one, learn from Andrew Whitworth. I mean, left tackle and wide receiver are two different things, but the Bengals like to pay – Mike Brown does pay skill position players. He pays tackles a lot too, but, you know, one of your best players ever to walk through the doors, don't let him go. Let him retire a Bengal. Do the right thing. Pay him. The other thing is, again, I'll reiterate, I don't know that trading him away for a young signal caller is a good move because of the polarizing aspects of the players in this class. Also, you're doing a disservice right away to that signal caller by getting rid of a premier pass-catching
weapon. That is true. That is true.
So, I mean, it's kind of like, well, what are you doing? I think you hang on to him. He's probably got, like you said, John, 2 to 3 years of really good play left. You can extend Tyler Boyd, and you bring in a new quarterback to groom behind Andy Dalton, and you have those two guys lined up long-term for this team. A new quarterback comes in and uses those weapons. I think that just does an immediate disservice by doing that. And then the other thing is, if they free up 15 or so million of cap space by getting rid of AJ Green and they move up to get a quarterback, do you believe that this team is going to use a substantial part of that money in outside free agency to get an impact player? I do not.
No.
And at this point now, you would have wanted to dump that salary earlier to then get into the earlier part of the free agency fray and get another premier player at another position. So at this point, I just don't think it makes sense. I think, like you said, John, extend the guy, let him retire a Bengal, let him try and, you know, make a bid for the Hall, continue his bid for the Hall of Fame as a Bengals player. Why not keep him and, you know, help out Andy Dalton, help out the next quarterback that comes along as he's here. Thanks for all the calls tonight, folks. Thanks for sticking with us. All of the comments in the live YouTube chat. We got some texts as well. We are just low on time. We've had a jam-packed show, as we probably expected with the onset of free agency. But we appreciate all the feedback. John, any final thoughts before we get out of here and or I mute myself for an extended period of time again?
I think we just learned a lot about what this franchise still is, and maybe some of us kind of jumped the gun and assumed that because they're bringing in a head coach who is used to an environment that is very open to bringing in outside talent in all feasible ways possible, that transition was going to happen overnight. But I think we realized that not only does Zach Taylor not have the influence to do that just yet, but perhaps maybe Duke Tobin isn't quite doesn't quite have the role that we may have believed that he is. And maybe not only he's not a GM in name, maybe he's just not a GM at all. And I think that there's still major questions that the Blackburn administration and Mike Brown's influence, or what his influence still is. I think there's still major question marks with that, and how much has really changed going into this new era of Bengals football. If Zach Taylor's coaching staff can get the most out of right now, what looks to be most of the same roster going into 2019, then that's fine. But there's still major questions with their process. And I think this past couple of days have really opened a lot of eyes in that and really have closed a lot of optimism. And there's still a lot of questions that this team needs to answer.
Yeah, I just you got to wonder what that, you know, young coach, first time head coach. I mean, does he sit here and did he know that this was going to be the process? Did he sign up for that, or did he think and was told a different route was going to be taken? Look, as we sit here right now, it's still just the first of actual day of free agency, but rumors are low. As we talked with Andre Parada, there's probably more rental deals on the horizon. Nothing real substantial. Maybe these guys will come in and help, but you know, there's not a ton of franchise changing players out there at this point. and the Bengals have the capital to still spend and make some moves, but we'll see what they do. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. It's also on the Megaphone platform. You can get it on YouTube and on CincyJungle.com. Our thanks to Andre Parada for joining us and giving us all kinds of great insight with the salary cap, contract structures, and everything that has transpired with the Bengals so far and what may be transpiring in the days ahead. He's on Twitter at AndreParada13, so go check him out. We hope to have him on again soon. Thanks, everybody, for all of your feedback, all of your participation, calls, texts, everything. We're sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but keep trying us. We'll try and get to those in the future. John, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
See you guys.
All right. Have a good rest of the week. We'll continue to keep you updated on all things Bengals. Keep it at the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. Keep it at CincyJungle.com. See you next time.